just going on to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Right, okay, Filthy Shambles, Season 3, Episode 38. I'm Spooky, I'm joined by Dan. Dan, welcome, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, good, man. All good. Have you had a good weekend, like I'm sure all Spurs fans did?
Yeah, I mean, basically every weekend is just centric to what Tottenham are doing.
I think it's really good, actually, just on that, just to look forward to the football for a change, like from compared to the last few years. That's the biggest thing, isn't it? Like, we want more games. We want as many games as we can because we look forward to it now.
100%. Even with the sticky moments that we've had and the drama of injuries and suspensions and the loss of form of certain players and that loss of fluidity and all those other little story arcs, they're all part of the process, all part of the journey. It's all part of just Ange Postecoglou formulating his plan and trying to work out who he needs to bring in and how he can improve players. But it's because you know we're onto a good thing without overcommitting. It makes it easier because on the eye, Spurs, relatively speaking, have been entertaining, even if at times we've been frustrating. It's a completely different atmosphere to the desperation of the last four seasons under Conte. As good as Conte was in moments, and you know, as good as we wanted him to be, unfortunately, the output was not good, and it was draining and it was exhausting. And so we got the opposite thing. And like, why would you choose not to be content about your football team? I mean, you know, we can start talking. In fact, let me just start on this, right? We're fourth in the Premier League. Yeah. Okay, and I'm not saying war a trophy. I'm not saying, oh, that's your lot, Tottenham. Let's all kick back and retire off the back of that. My point is, at the start of the season, there were conversations from other fan bases and other pundits, probably tongue-in-cheek, suggesting that we might get relegated off the back of what happened with Conte and appointing Postecoglou, right? And then everyone else kind of started thinking, well, come on, let's think about this pragmatically. Seventh or eighth, maybe. Sixth, if we're lucky. It's going to take a while. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? And now we're at this point, and I know like the expectations are higher, but it's because of Ange Postecoglou. The expectations are higher. It's the benchmark he is setting. So it's a case of leave the binary and the finality and all the other things that kind of bring you down. Just allow yourself to be a bit more free and expressive in a positive way and just let things play out. It's way too early for us to knee-jerk. It's way too early for us to also go fully in on Postecoglou, that he's definitely going to be the Bill Nicholson of the modern era and whatever else. No, I'm not as a happy clapper. I'm not reaching out for the stars this early. I'm still very much grounded because I know this is Tottenham and I know how quickly things can go wrong in modern football, and especially for Spurs. I think the club's more grounded now. You know, we're not desperate. We're not going for must win now serial winners and all the other kind of contrived attempts at shortcutting our way to something that's tangible. We're doing it the right way. So just kind of go into autopilot a little bit and enjoy it week to week. And I think we've got that with Spurs. And when Spurs are not playing, it's a little bit depressing because you kind of do want to get back to the game or watch them on the TV if you're not travelling to an away stadium. So having said all that, it feels like every game in North London recently has been the same game, and we're watching the same game play out every week. And pre-game and on this pod, I'm often saying, we need to be convincing. We need to be convincing. How did you take to the first half? Because the first 25 minutes were decent, and then it kind of deroded a little bit. I mean, what was your gut and your brain telling you as you were watching it play out?
Yeah, I was fuming at half time, to be fair, just because it was just a game of like they were the better side for the last 20 minutes of the first half.
Yeah.
And I thought we started so well, and you know, I said the last time I was on that I thought Bissouma needed to be someone who he's got to really sort of light up his game for the end of the season now, because ultimately he's clearly who Ange wants to be playing in that sort of deeper role. So he therefore needs to be rewarding him with good performances. And yeah, like I thought he started really well. I thought he was good against West Ham as well, actually. So I thought it was good to maybe start seeing some consistency from him again. And then I don't know what it is about us, but when we tend to score like first in a game, I feel like this team, the next step for this team is to not just rest on that lead, that they need to always be thinking like it's 0-0 and we need to sort of like control the game and go again and maintain that intensity. Because if you look at examples throughout this season where we've scored early, like West Ham away, Wolves away, and Forest at home, just as an example, right?
Yeah.
Like we instantly sort of like become the lesser team after scoring those goals. Like Wolves away and West Ham away, we scored really early on in those games, right? Especially Wolves, and we just never. Like Wolves was a bit different because obviously that was one of the worst, most empty performances all season, right? But
it was off the back of the Chelsea implosion as well.
Yeah, of course it was. Yeah,
it was too early for us to recover from that. But yeah, it's fair comment.
But I think my wider point is that just in general, like we seem to like fall away after like we seem to be our most vulnerable after taking the lead like in games.
Agreed.
We seem to be much more comfortable in being the team that's chasing the game at all times, whether that's to try and score when it's 0-0 or whether we're losing and we have to then try and score like a couple goals at least. You know, like that because the second half has always been the feature half in our games, really, especially at home. Like we've been much more of a second half team all season, and I think that's kind of what you can expect at home as well.
I'm going to stick with the midfield, right? And it doesn't matter how we do this. Everyone's processed the game, you know, and this is filthy shambles. There's definitely no running order. And other pods are going to do the tactical stuff in a lot better. And if that's your kind of thing, I mean, you know, you can go and listen to that. It's, you know, I'm not going to be offended. But I want to stick to something because one of the things about the way that we look at the next game, and we're looking forward to it, but we've also got these expectations. You know, we need to start quickly. We need to be sharp. We need to score early. We need to build on it. We need to boss the midfield. Say what? Boss the midfield. And that's where I've landed. And I think most of us have landed on the fact that I think a lot of our problems stem from this kind of lack of authority from the middle of the pitch, that we've kind of lost something during the course of the season. That I know Postecoglou talks about the fluidity of the team as a collective, but in terms of a unit in the middle, it doesn't feel like I could write a paragraph on the identity of the midfield. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sure again a lot of nerds will be able to tell you what the responsibilities are, but you know, you look at the Forest game, for example, it was a little bit Wild West. You know, I'm not sure what Saar was doing. Bissouma is blowing hot and cold. As much as I want him to kind of studs on ball and be the authority and be the player that says, I'm going to own the tempo. I'm going to dictate the tempo. And I know we don't necessarily play in that way, right? We're not this kind of team. We're very much a team that plays a high line. We can be very good on the counter as well. But I feel that when you look at the first half, which was everything that was wrong after those opening 25 minutes, and then you look at the second half, there's two things that shifted, right? We made two changes in midfield. And the other thing was the level of energy, the level of intensity, the urgency. The agency, the way that we just had the ball at our feet, rather than just say we're going to slow the ball down, because this is how I saw it, Dan, and let me know whether you agree with this. We'd get the ball, And I know, like, Forest, like most low block teams, like most teams that come to North London, they just play behind the ball, congest the their penalty area. We can't get through them. But what we're doing is we're not moving the ball fast enough. We're not moving players fast enough because everything has stopped. So it becomes this kind of moment in the matrix, and you're like, well, okay, well, what now? Like, there's no bullets being fired. We're just everything has frozen in time. And then you look at the second half, and it's like bang, 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 bang. Got the ball. You're shifting. You're moving. You're looking for a player. You're taking shots early. It just the whole fabric of Tottenham changes from something. Well, from the first half to the second half, fabric wasn't the right word to use in that analogy. But do you get what I'm saying? There's this kind of shift. Like, first of all, what is wrong with the midfield in your eyes? And secondly, why is there that kind of seismic shift between the first half and the second half? What changes exactly? Should it change in-game? Is the in-game management with the players? We've got three captains on the pitch. And nothing changes. Is it the Postecoglou at halftime having to tell them you're doing this wrong, or is it something? Is it something completely different?
Well, I mean,
there's a lot to unpack there, mate. Sorry.
Yeah, I suppose just on that last point, he must have told them something was wrong because he took 2/3 of the midfield off against Forest in Bissouma and Saar and replaced them with Højbjerg and Bentancur, and they were both obviously better. I feel like Højbjerg was more steady. I felt like he had a couple of wobbly moments against Forest and put us in trouble a couple of times. But on the whole, I think he's actually been very good this season when he's come on as a sub. I think the criticism of him has maybe been that he's not necessarily started well or started games well. Do you know what I mean? I had good games from when he starts, but I think that's just going to come down to we have to be fair. He isn't starting many games. Like, it's very far and few between when he starts a game of football.
Yeah, his match fitness, his actual match fitness is, you know, he's not calibrated like a player that's played every single week. He just needs consistency.
Level. And like anyone, they need consistency. So there's a couple of things. I think, like, obviously, we saw a change in personnel. If we look at West Ham and Forest, because they're two really good examples, because they were two different midfield starting threes, there was with one change. So Bentancur came in for Saar against West Ham, Bissouma still started and Maddison still started, and then obviously Saar came in against Forest. I thought Bentancur was really good against West Ham. I thought he kept the ball really well. I thought he was able to drop the shoulder and turn his man and sort of set the attacks off well. I thought Bissouma was I thought he had a really good game against West Ham. I thought he was much more press resistant. I thought he was sharper with his passing and stuff like that. And then it seems to be falling down with Maddison, but I don't know if it's because of Maddison, because I thought he had an okay game against West Ham, and I thought he was okay against Forest, but he seems to be, I think what happens at times, it looks like he's just giving the ball away, or he's either holding on to it for too long, or he's making a pass and it's falling to the opposition. But I think there's something missing between him and our forward players, particularly Son, who started up front in both of those games. And I think Son's had two really poor games back-to-back against West Ham and Forest, I have to be honest. I don't think he was good in either of the games.
Do you think with Maddison it's a form thing? Because people said this would happen, that he's a great player when he's on it, but sometimes his form kind of disappears for a while. He isn't
playing to his level, is he? Like, we know... Mm. We saw what his level was earlier in the season, but I think what makes him look good, you've got to remember, is that even if he's not scoring all the goals, what makes him look good is people finishing off chances. And I think he's tried to set attacks up at certain points and played clever passes and clever balls and stuff like that, but those players haven't read it. So that's where there's a bit of a disconnect, and I think that makes him look bad rather than the person who should be getting onto the ball. Do you know what I mean?
Right, okay.
So I think there's a little bit of that, but at the same time, I think he was better at staying higher up the pitch against Forest. Against West Ham, he was coming far too deep, like, to try and get it. Like, he needs to stay higher up to the front so that he can connect the deeper midfield players to the attackers.
Yeah.
I don't think we're really having any issues from wide, which is interesting, because you've had Brennan Johnson and Werner start two games in a row. And I think both of them have actually been really good. I think Johnson, particularly against West Ham, was unbelievable. I thought he was really good in terms of the amount of crosses, that good crosses as well, that he put in, where absolutely nobody was gambling on the end of them. I just think that that's where you've got to then look at people like Son. What are you doing? You've got to be reading where those crosses are coming in and gambling on them. And you wonder if someone like Richarlison might have done that, which I think we've lost out by not really having a fully fit Richie in those two games. Or just, if you're not, even if you're not going to say Richarlison, that's where I think the obvious kind of like gap for us to fill in the summer is that sort of centre-forward position.
This is it. This is why the Ivan Toney conversation won't go away at the moment.
I think there's other options. I think you've got Toney, and you've got, I really like Isak at Newcastle. I know he's obviously a little bit injury prone, but I think he's a better age profile and fits our way of playing probably better than Toney does, to be honest. And then I'm sure there's plenty of other options out there. You've got Watkins, but he's a bit of a gooner and he's got Arsenal written all over him, I think. So
that's funny, yeah, because a lot of people say that Toney's got Guna written all over him.
I think they both do. But what happens is that I think if Arsenal were going to spend big money, I think they'd rather spend it on Watkins, which is why I think he'll go there, because he's just had a much better season than what Toney has. It's weird because I could see us getting Toney only because I don't think he'll actually cost as much as what was being talked about in January, but I think the hype in January and the price tags they were talking was all off the back of anticipation for how good he's going to be and how much Brentford have missed him.
Yeah, it's silliness. No one, come to the summer,
he's probably no more than 40 million quid. Do you know what I mean? It's just one of those. But to go back to the midfield, I thought Bentancur, especially when he came on against Forest, he's just got something that, I think he's just got so much silk about him. He really is like Berbatov in midfield at times, like in terms of his first touch, the way he rolls people. He just makes the game look so simple at times, and he's really starting to get back to his best now, I think, and starting to get into a rhythm. Like, because I thought he's had two good games in a row now, which is really, you know, just really promising to see.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because I think there's nothing wrong. I don't mind the idea of Bentancur, when fully fit, being that midfielder that displaces someone like Sarr, because as good as Sarr is and as promising as Sarr is, he's only 21, 22. We've got years to go with Sarr. He's had a couple bad games and there's nothing to freak out about. Like, he's allowed to have that. He's got yonks to go at this point.
Listen, the whole thing around, like, and you see it a lot. You see it a lot with, you see it a lot, I'm sure, on social media, and you see it a lot with questions being asked on other podcasts. I think it was something on the Fighting Cock. Someone was having a go at, I think, Kulusevski, actually. Should we get rid of him?
Mm.
You know, were Juventus right to get rid of him? It's like, mate, what he's so basically what we're doing.
I mean, those two questions don't make sense when you ask them one after the other, do they?
No,
should we get rid of him is a conversation that I think you could have, not necessarily in that derogatory sort of way. Like, could we be open to selling him is probably a fair question, fairer question. But
fairer would be to actually try and work out why it's not working at the minute, why he's kind of lost his edge a minute. Is there something to be said about him being an alternative number 10 to Maddison and having a bit of competition between the two in the middle? Can he play that role, or is he over-ambitious in terms of wanting that compared to maybe playing out on the wing? He's out on the wing, why can't he do a Johnson? Why can't he do a Timo? When he cuts in, why does he take?
Because he doesn't have the pace, but he's just not as quick as them, is he? And this is the thing, is that what we've kind of, although Werner is predominantly right footed, we've seen that he started getting some real good consistency in terms of his crossing with his left foot from that left hand side, and he's a real threat, and his pace frightens the life
every
out
time,
of
mate. Every single time.
There was one cross that went right across the face of goal.
I remember
against Forest, and I was like, again, how has nobody read that? Like, because all Forest had to gamble. They were probably terrified of touching it because they'd already scored one own goal. So he just needed someone to gamble on it. And because that's the thing, is that you've got him doing that side, and you've got Werner. We've got two players that are crossing with their strong enough feet from those sides. So we're getting crosses in the box, but nobody finishing them. I don't know if, like, you know, that's maybe sort of a tactical tweak we need to do in terms of are we crossing from too deep? Do we need to get more to the byline and cut back? Like, it's all those sort of arguments, but that's the detail that I'm not certain on. But when you talk about Kulusevski, yeah, I think right now he probably does just look like rotation for, you know, or I don't think you could drop Johnson at the moment because he's played really well in the last few games and he's clearly doing what Ange wants him to do out there. And Deki, when he's on the pitch, isn't really
but here's the
looking
thing.
That great. That's the problem.
Here's the thing, Dan. This is like for anyone that knows me, they're thinking, oh, here he goes again. He's going to bang on about the same thing that he always bangs on about. But it's fucking true, and it tears me apart every time I have to keep banging on about this. You look at Johnson early season, even people that I know, friends that I know, who would playfully say he's not good enough, he's not brave enough, he's too young. I'd say, well, he has been thrown into the deep end. He probably shouldn't be playing as many games, or maybe he should be playing the games. And the whole point of it is for him to gradually work his way to a particular level now that he's at Tottenham compared to the pressures that he had at Nottingham Forest. But the big narrative for the kind of cartoon football fans was he's a waste of money, he's 45 million quid, he's not good enough, he's shit, we've wasted money, we should be buying someone better, etc, etc, etc. Or maybe you should just fucking wait. Just sit down and wait, put your slippers on. Fold your feet, your legs, however you want to sit on your rocking chair. Chill the fuck out. Let the kid grow. Now, people are going, well, why should we be signing players that need to grow? Why don't we buy end product players? It's like, mate, come on, let's not be stupid here. You can buy your end product players that tend to cost a lot of money, and you can also buy your youth players, the players that you know that are going to be £100 million players, but you're going to be able to build your team around them.
It's also a bit of a myth, I think. I do think it's a bit of a myth. Like we've signed, in quotes, end product players before.
Of course we have.
Fuck all for us.
Exactly.
Like, it's just there's no exact science to it. It's about good scouting and finding players that fit in with the group as a person, which is something Ange just talked about a lot, and ultimately have the attributes that fit the system we want to play.
And it's a team game.
Well, Johnson's clearly shown that. Like, I don't even know what the argument's about. Look how many goal involvements he's had this season.
Mate, like, even when he wasn't playing well, like, based on how you critique football and what you want to focus on in terms of positives and negatives, like, even when he wasn't perhaps doing as much as you wanted him to do, like decision-making and the rest of it, he was still creating things. He was still scoring or assisting, like you said, or getting, or just doing something that would change the momentum of the game and being very direct. Mm. And I guess to bring it back to the point I was making before I kind of lost myself in the performative arts of podcasting, Kulusevski's a young guy as well. People forget about this. Very young guy. Like many of our players, incredibly mature, and often we just forget the age. And I know people are going to again say, well, look at the kid at Man United and look at this player. Mate, I don't care about other football clubs. The players that we've got is our collective. They're our players. And Kulusevski is having a slight identity crisis at the minute. But again, it's part of the kind of DNA shift of the club's makeup in terms of who we are and how we're meant to play and who fits where best. And Kulusevski, we know he has the capacity to do a lot more. And perhaps it's just down to the management of the player. And yeah, okay, let's see where we're at after the summer and into next season. You know, things do change very quickly in football. The players that you think are going to be the future turn out not to be the future because someone else rose into the club who's genuinely the player that's going to take that position by the scruff of the neck. You just have
him,
to...
You could see a world where, for instance, he potentially is sold for decent money, you would think. And I'm just speculating here because I'm not. This isn't a wishing him away or
no. Of course,
it's just a fact of life. Like I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that someone like him is sold for someone like who we saw at the weekend, Morgan Gibbs-White, to come to the club. Like, he looks fucking fantastic as a young player.
Yeah.
You know? So like that, I think that would be possibly a move that you would almost accept, wouldn't you? Because if we've got a player who he's been played wide, but really wants to play as a 10, but isn't going to play as a 10 regularly because when Maddison's fit, he's going to play. And then you've got someone like Morgan Gibbs-White, who is then, he's a number 10 creative attacking midfielder, and he's got more athleticism than Maddison. He could be someone that even comes in and, like, is the future in that role, you know? Like,
exactly.
That's nothing to be sad about. I'm not saying that'll happen, but that's just a world that I could see something like that happening.
But this is just you're being pragmatic, you're being logical, you're just looking at a potential
He's just
scenario.
Not playing well, though, Spook. Yeah, I don't think you say it's like an identity crisis, was what you said. I don't even think it's that. He's just not playing well. When he's getting on the ball, he's not really.
Well, he's overthinking it.
When he came on at the weekend, there was times where he was in and should have put Son in or put Johnson in, and he just held onto the ball for too long.
Yeah,
it's just indecisiveness.
He's just
not playing well. He won't be like that forever. He will shake it off and he will get back to having good games. But it's not a problem. If he's then. Let's allow him to go through that and
exactly
just give him a break. You've got Johnson, you've got Ferner on the other side, and you've got Maddison. He doesn't need to play because we've got others that are playing well. It's a nice position to be in, rather than being in a place where we've been previously of not having enough squad depth, and our first 11 is full of players who aren't playing well, and we can't rotate them out.
The interesting thing, just to stick on, we'll stick on the wingers, and then we go back to the game and in terms of how it played out in that second half, and obviously the fact that we were taking shots on goal, which was an incredible moment. I'm sure if Spurs still did DVDs, we'll have a DVD of that coming out in the club shop. Like when you look at Johnson's story arc for this season, you know, he's just gradually become, like you said, almost undroppable, just in terms of, I don't mean that in that he's absolutely playing out of his skin and he's absolutely vital, but in terms of the way that we often score the same type of cutback goal, you know, the fact that we're able to do that so easily with such simplicity because of what the player offers us, you know, you could argue that it's just him playing at full pelt and not even at his best. That as a winger, he's doing exactly what he needs to do. The same with Timo Werner. As critical as people wish to be about that, about him in particular, because of his stats and his numbers at other football clubs and the fact that he played as a striker at Chelsea and he wasn't scoring and you miss it as his composure isn't there. He can ping. We've seen him score some incredible goals. You know, you could do a highlights reel, basically, of his sitters and then of his finishing. And you could scratch your head thinking, how's this the same player? He has a composure problem. Now, I'm not going to pretend that we can't do better, but better in this instance could be 50, 60, 70 million quid, right? Or maybe not. You could still find a good up-and-coming player that might just have that finishing touch. But in terms of Timo being 15 to 17 million quid, and the fact that we're going to be in Europe next season, touch wood, and we need a squad, and the fact that every time he gets the ball out wide, I genuinely, as much as you want to mock him, and some people will, I feel something's going to happen here. Now, sometimes what happens is the ball goes blazing over, right? but most of the time, arguably, it is cut back. And, you know, we went 1-0 up because he put the ball into a dangerous area. You either defend that or we score. And we found the in-between in that moment. And it's because of his endeavour and his work rate and the fact that he can get himself into those positions. I like both of them, and they've both been maligned, and people have kind of scoffed at, you know, if we want to be going places, we need to do better than this. Well, you know, newsflash, we have to start to travel before we look to get to the place we need to be going. So you can't just start driving on an empty tank and no wheels on your fucking car. You need to be in a position where there's some momentum, and I think these players are giving us momentum in these games. I hope that they persist in terms of form and give the manager, you know, a few questions that need answering, just in terms of, you know, are these players, should they be starting every week? Because then we're in a really good position if they are, because it means they're good enough to start every week. And we're halfway towards sorting out the squad depth. So I'm happy for the two of them. Mm. I mean, we've had this conversation on and off for the last like month or two, but we've got to sign Timo for that price.
Yeah, every game that passes, it just becomes more and more of a no brainer. Like he doesn't have to. I don't think he has to be seen as this person that. Oh, is he good enough to be the left sided option for us next season? It's like he'll be one of. Like it's fine. We'll get another one if we have to. You know, he won't be the only person in that position. There'll be someone else, just like there'll be someone else for Brennan. Like it's just good to have options, and he's a really good option now. He's a threat. That's what you need.
Exactly. So let's get back to the game. So we go 1-0 up. Obviously, first 25 minutes good. Kind of fall apart. Forest look, you know, I was saying to the bloke next to me, I think this is as good as Forest can play. But unfortunately, it's good enough for them to get behind us and score. Again, another kind of soft-looking kind of move.
We concede shit goals at home at the moment.
Yeah, very
really
soft.
Shit goals.
Yeah.
But the Luton one and that one were almost like identical in terms
of
the defence looking. So how can you have a defence made up of the four players that we've got and concede goals that poorly? I mean, Udogie was to blame for the goal. He just did not track his runner. He gave up. He saw him running and didn't track back.
So without getting too deep, because we haven't got heat maps here and play positions and all the other stats, but what do you think it is? Because you go back to earlier in the season and nothing was getting through us, right? More or less nothing was getting through us. We looked more solid. What's happening now where we're a little bit lackadaisical, a bit casual, players, like you said, not tracking back lack of awareness? There was a lot there was a hell of a lot. I don't know if you noticed this, but there was a lot of our players looking at other players and like shrugging as if, who's accountable? Is it your fault or my fault? There was a lot of that going on.
He was lifting his arms up and I'm thinking, well, it's your fucking fault, mate. You didn't follow him. So don't try and make out and pass the blame. Obviously, the ball goes under Romero, who dives in, but he's trying to block across. Like, what else is he supposed to do? And then I think it's Porro who tries to get back, and the ball basically goes through him. And that's unlucky. Like, he couldn't have done any more, really. And then Vicario is in no position or has any right to make a save there. So that's it. Like, it just looks poor when you watch it. But it all stems from that runner going free. And a doggy not tracking now. And I don't know if that's a little bit of complaint. He was all over the place, I thought, that on the weekend, a doggy, especially in the first half. Better in the second half, but first half, I thought he was all over the shop. I don't know if there's a bit of complacency at times, like people accepting that. Because at the start of the season, everyone was unproven. Like everyone had a point to prove. And they had to show like how good they were and, you know, prove it to kind of us as fans, to the media and the people, the critics out there and all that sort of stuff. And they've done that in the first 10 games and then have maintained a level for a while. But then I think every now and then, especially against what we would call lesser opposition, we see some frailties, I think, where we show a little bit of complacency, a little bit of, oh, they won't go through and score it. Oh, they've scored. And then I don't typically tend to find that it's Romero or Van de Ven that are to blame for the goals that we concede, which is weird. Like, do you know what I mean? I think them two and Vicario are generally the most reliable players we've got in that back five. No one's talking about Romero. I said it in the group chat yesterday. Like, the geezer's just been immense since he came back from his suspension. Like, he's just not. He just doesn't put a foot wrong. He very rarely. I don't know. Try and tell me the last time he lost a 1-on-1, either in the air on the floor. His passing's brilliant. He's just he's a natural leader back there all of a sudden now. And I think he really is starting to kind of like, you know, get hold of that back five from time to time. And I think he's the standards setter. And then Van de Ven, like, I mean, I know we were talking about the fact that we just conceded a really poor goal, but the rest of that half was then just all them, obviously.
Oh my God.
It was just like, what the fuck's happened then? But
Van de Ven, isn't he great?
Like he's just mustard, isn't he? He's so good.
But isn't it great when you've got? I mean, this is the thing. It's like this is why, you know, thinking back to how Pochettino's team, you know, kind of became the team that it became. You know, that kind of spitefulness, that kind of everyone protected each other. There was like a brotherhood of men in terms of how we were like an army, right? Of 11 players, and you kind of had this affinity with all of them. You fell in love with all the players in every position, and it's the same type of thing that's happening at Spurs at the minute. And you know, when Mickey just put on the off, I mean, in fact, it wasn't even afterburners. Again, I turned to the bloke next to me and I said, "That's his walking pace."
That was when he made the recovery run.
Yeah.
He wasn't even sprinting, was he? Like,
it's just fantastic.
That guy set off and he just had no chance of getting to that ball. It was just like, the other one was in the West Ham game where I think Antonio had been put in and he started ahead of Mickey, but then Mickey just literally made what seemed like three strides and put an arm across Antonio, and Antonio just stopped, didn't even try and challenge for the ball. Mickey was allowed to turn and then start us off on another attack. And Antonio is still facing the way he was running. Like, he's just going, fuck me. I've got nothing here.
And it's not just that, you know, he's quick on his feet, right? It's that he reads the game really well.
He's a
very good defender. You know, he compliments Romero so well. And again, it's one of these things that we just have to wait a little bit for the players, for the manager, you know, for all the conditioning and preparation that we do and all the other things that we do in training, to just, again, reshape the composure levels and the awareness levels of the way that we defend as a team. It's not just always, because we lose the ball in midfield and then the defence are kind of backtracking. So I'm happy when I see those four players on the team sheet. You know, we have got a quality defence. It just isn't quite at 100%. And that's fine, because we know what it can be at 100%. And it's the same for the rest of the team, to be fair. And there's little question marks here, there and everywhere that need, again, questions that need answering that will conclusively be answered at some point in the very near future, because we're getting towards the end of the season now. We've got another summer. We know a lot more about what the club and the manager wants from his squad. In terms of the players, is he going to buy players to complement and fit in? Are we going to buy players to compete with some of these players? So it's fine. We can still critique and we can still have little question marks and work out why, you know, players lose form and whatever else. But sometimes the answer is quite simplistic. Some of these guys are young. Some of these guys are dealing with a funny type of pressure and stress at Spurs, because we're in a transitional season, but we're also setting benchmarks from month to month where we know we can do better, but we're doing better because of the players and the manager, and you're just trying to build on top of that. So we come out second half, and we mentioned this earlier, the intensity's completely changed. And you could tell what was going to happen. You knew that Spurs were going to win this game, like, within minutes. You know, we're getting the ball. Madison's on the ball. He's turning. He's looking. He's finding players. Everybody's moving in the right way. Højbjerg comes on and he's like, "Hey, lads, remember this?" And he takes a fucking shot. I think it came off someone's head and it was saved. But we looked more direct. We looked more likely that we were going to make something happen, and we did.
I think that switch at half time I was really pleased to see, because I think we've been a bit too reactive in games this season, like, and I think that's obviously been a criticism of Ange, and we've done it. I said it on the last pod I was on, like, there's been loads of managers that I think we could throw that accusation at. Like, at Spurs, we just seem to see so often. I'm sure lots of clubs do, but it just feels like we've got so many managers who just wait until fucking God knows when to make a change, when you can see that we need to do something different. But changed two people in midfield. Just came out, we was miles better. Both the goals that we scored were fucking brilliant. Like, the sensational goals, the pair of them. I mean, Mickey's especially was just like, I mean, I don't know where you were sat. Where would you have been sat in the ground when that went in? Like, it was just an absolute rifled effort, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I'm in the south stand, like, just, I guess, mid in the middle of it. I think, I guess, above 1882.
So he was like aiming for you, or just below you.
Oh, I'm at an angle, I'm to the slightly
maybe
to the
he
right.
Maybe he wasn't. He miskicked it. And went in.
But he leathered that, man. It's just so good that because we keep saying it. We all say it. We say it every week, whether you're at the game, watching the game, or on a podcast or wherever.
Have a shot.
Have a shot. Just make something happen. Just get into that. It's like a instinct as well, right? Because I get it. We get to the penalty area. It's congested. Games slow down and we can't find an angle. We can't find a way to get through them. Ball goes sideways and the team counterattack. Whereas the way that we started out in the second half, because of the movement, because of the intensity, suddenly you've got Forest having to chase us. That opens up space. And then the way we attack the penalty area, it becomes more likely that you're going to create something because there is space to run into and there's space to receive the ball. So to get the ball in that position, I just think, nah, I'm fucking having this.
He got it at his feet quickly as well. Like, because he took a touch and it just sort of, like, the time between his first touch and the shot was like something you'd see Maddison do, like for a centre back as tall as him to move his feet that quickly, which is just like so impressive. The keeper didn't move. I don't think he fucking even saw it until it had gone past him. Do you know what I mean? It was just a flash basically for him,
and it felt good because it was almost like a statement. You know, like, all right, we're having this now, and obviously we follow it up with a third, with Porro, with another decent finish. Do you know what I'm saying?
He's got great technique, hasn't he, though? Like, we all know
that. Fantastic. He should score a lot more.
His ability to... Well, look at the goal he scored against was it fucking Burnley in the FA Cup. Yeah, like, ridiculous goal. So he's got it in his locker. I couldn't believe that was his first Premier... it's not his first Premier League goal. It's his first this season, isn't it? So he has scored in the Premier League before.
Yeah.
So, it was a really good moment for the pair of them because I was kind of happy that... I don't know... Obviously, we don't... Everyone's obviously got their own opinion. Like, we all watch like the media stuff, whether we actually pay much mind to the stuff they say. But it was nice to actually see people like him and Van de Ven getting credit from that sort of like part of the media, because I do feel like people like Van de Ven, because he's not Van Dijk at Liverpool and he's not Saliba at Arsenal, he isn't talked about a lot. But I think he's really started to kind of like cement his place as a top centre back in this league now.
Dan,
I know he's got leagues to go. He's got levels to go, but
he's
already proven himself, hasn't he? Do you know what I mean?
We don't need them to talk about us.
No, I know.
Do you know what I'm saying?
But I'm
saying, sneak up on them.
It is just nice to get that for the players, though. It's nice that they get that recognition because it's all well and good us saying like how good they are, but I do think it's like it is nice that when you start seeing that kind of like wider kind of recognition for how good they are, because sometimes like. It took Gareth Bale basically a hat-trick against Inter Milan for anyone to start talking about him.
Mm.
But we knew he was playing really well before that, you know, and it's just, that was kind of like a good sort of...
No,
like
I agree.
Stage was kind of set for Mickey in that way, you know.
I agree. And it's good for him, like from a confidence level, professional level. I mean, you know, having the media or pundits or whomever talk about you in a good positive way is going to kind of give you a little bit of an uplift. So, I mean, some players don't give a shit. They just crack on.
I'm not saying he does. He probably doesn't. Like, can you imagine Romero giving the slightest fuck about what anyone says about him?
Exactly my point. But I still don't mind going under the radar as much as a club like Tottenham can. I don't even know if that's really possible, to be fair, because all eyes on us regardless, because we tend to be box office.
Yeah.
Especially with the fact that we've got to play City and Liverpool and Arsenal and we've got Newcastle at the weekend. Like, you can't get away
from
Spurs.
Chelsea as well.
The Chelsea game, obviously a big narrative around that. You know, you can't really go stealth. But anyway, so we see out the game. You know, kind of, again, let Forest back into it a little bit. You know, it's a little bit untidy, a little bit messy. But again, I think we're also sometimes... In fact, let's lead into this. Like, because I think the atmospheres, the atmosphere debate and question, and questions around whether we kind of back the team, whether we're reactive to the team, because often we're not, right? And then we score, and then people start singing Postecoglou's name, and it's like, you know, you hear a couple of people around me say, "Oh, we're a fickle bunch, aren't we? We're a fickle bunch," and then they laugh about it. And there's this conversations around we were never really that loud and that influential back in White Hart Lane. You know, it was a case of there's certain games that we are up for it for 90 minutes and there are other games where we're not. And there's no disrespect to Forest and whatever else. It's just the way big clubs are with certain fixtures. And even Liverpool, you know, for all the hype around their atmosphere, it's certain games that they produce that atmosphere for. And there's other games where it is silent as fuck. And I just think it's just a consequence of certain clubs that are incredibly comfortable in who they are and what they are. However, here's my theory a little bit around why maybe it is a strange experience in the stadium at the moment. Mm. I think it's not like a conspiracy theory. I just think that for the most part, the vast majority of Tottenham supporters, the ones that matter in terms of on the day inside the stadium and not on a timeline on an app, is that I think we know. I think we've accepted what we are this season. We've accepted that it's Postecoglou's first season. I don't think the pressure and the stress is as aggressive as it was last season, where I think we were all at the end of our tether. We were just like so desperate for it to work and so starved of actual enjoyment that we were at breaking point. I think at the minute, I think we're just a little bit reactive because we kind of know, well, things aren't perfect and we've got a lot of work to do and we've got things to do in the summer, blah, 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 blah. So it is a little bit pantomime, but it's a light experience. So when we're not doing well, it's a bit frustrating. But we kind of know we're going to get back into the game, and we do. And then we're ahead, and then we're singing again. What's your take on it? You know, I don't think there's really a debate to be had about the atmosphere. I just think we are in, we're cooking in the oven, you know, at the moment. Mm. We're not being served up on the table and people talking about the flavours and the smell and how amazing everything looks. I think we're still in the oven cooking very, very slowly.
Yeah, I think we've always really been like that, to be honest. Even at White Hart Lane, I think that the atmosphere was always easier to make sound good because it's a 36,000-seater stadium versus what it is now in terms of pretty like nearly double the capacity. You used to have your sections in terms of where the atmosphere is, and right now there's only really kind of like one section where there's noise that kind of like comes into it, which is the south stand. There isn't really kind of like the shelf doesn't really exist anymore. And then obviously the other areas, like, it's kind of just a lottery in terms of who turns up, right? Yeah. But I don't know. I always think that the games like Luton at home, Forest at home, Sheffield United at home, these are all games where you typically don't really feel like you need to sort of like that. I think it's like the team should get us off our feet rather than the big games where we feel like we need to kind of do our bit.
That's how it's played out. Yeah.
Like Arsenal at home, the time where a couple of years ago when we beat them to fourth, like that was just the most incredible atmosphere at home. And that was where that was like the probably like the best it's been in that new ground. And you kind of need to replicate that in those big games that are coming up that we've got at home. But I think we will do. You know, like when it's a big game like that, we will do because we know that the team's capable of beating them. But we know that we'll kind of need to do our part. And I think the reason it can then turn sour, if you're like, you know, I was fuming at half-time. I don't know if there were boos or anything against Forest at half-time.
I don't think there was, no.
No, like... I think had we been under Mourinho or Conte, you'd have got boos just because of how you play him. But because we kind of like know what this team is now based on what we've seen this season, they'll get a lot more slack. And I think that there is a little bit of expectation in the sense of we pay a lot of fucking money, so you should be beating Forest and Luton at home. Like, it's as simple as that. I do think there's an element of that now.
That's just the bane of modern football. It's something that I can't really.
I don't think it can't be like that though, Spook. When it's
no, that's my point.
I can't
debate it. I can debate it for both sides, and that's the problem. Like, I'd like to go back to the ethics of belonging to a football club, and regardless of what's happening, you support your football club. I think everybody does. I think everybody does do that out of the box, even people that I probably don't like and don't agree with the way that they do experience their football experience. We all want Spurs to do well. I mean, that's like, that should be at the forefront of everything, right? And that you support them no matter what. And most of us have done that for our entire lives. So that's not up for debate either. So, yeah, you're right that because of the money being spent. I mean, Callum of the Fighting Cock was looking for a ticket. He got one in the end, a nice price in the standing area. But the ones around me were going for 99 quid. Now, that's a lot of money, ridiculous. Mate. It's a lot of money for Nottingham Forest at home. And then so you're coming to the game having paid 99 quid. Whether you want to feel entitled or not, you're going to feel entitled when you're there because you're going to feel like, I've paid 99 quid for this. Entertain
it's,
me.
It's, like, it's really hard to try and be gladiator. Measured, isn't it? It's really hard to try and be measured because you know that what you're paying for isn't a guarantee. Like, it's two teams of 11 trying to compete against each other. They can beat us, like, on a given day.
That's football, you know? Exactly.
Like, because that's football.
Exactly.
And it's like, you in reality, you don't really have the right to turn around and demand that they win because you've paid a certain amount. But you're still allowed to be pissed off and say it if you want out of frustration because it is just astronomical what we're asked to pay.
Yeah, completely agree. Just before we go into the Patreon part of the pod, Madison... Has he got a little temperament problem? I mean, what do you make of the punch, I think that's just
frustration, isn't it? Like, Yates is pathetic anyway, and I'm glad Roy Keane called him out because when we played Forest twice this season, he's been I don't normally wish ill on players, but I did like really hope that Bissouma had hurt him when he got sent off in that last game, but like, and then this time I was hoping Madison had fucking done his appendix or something like that, but.
He goes down really easily, doesn't he?
Oh, he's pathetic because he runs his trap all fucking game and then goes down and dives and all this stuff. And he should have got sent off because he'd asked him to go for VAR. He was making the VAR signal and telling the ref to go and review it.
Right, and that's a bookable offence.
He was on a yellow. It should have been a booking. He should have been off. Like, they just let them get... They just pick and choose when they want to implement these fucking rules. So frustrating. I think for Madison's part, it's just frustration because I think we were probably, what, I don't know if we were 1-1 at the time or whatever, but like he's probably not rating how he's playing in himself.
Yeah.
He probably thinks he should be doing better. And yeah. I couldn't tell you even now if it was a closed fist or an open hand. It wasn't a sending off. It was stupid.
Yeah, I've only seen one angle of it. And to be fair, I didn't give it much thought at the time. It was interesting watching it back. But there doesn't seem to be that much controversy. Absolutely no doubt we can pull out the Romero meme and just say, oh, there was another tackle actually in the game, wasn't there? This is actually something I've not followed up on. Someone...
Was it the one on Bentancur?
Yeah, and there was a conversation. There was someone in like two rows in front of me watching the game on their phone. It was just surreal.
Watching.
I think they were streaming. I don't know how they were doing it.
How did you get that signal in the stadium? That's incredible.
Exactly my point. I was thinking, mate, what is wrong with my network? I barely connect to the club's Wi-Fi. And this guy was literally, I was watching him. He was watching back. It was like a stream of the game. Unless it was highlights.
Unless he's doing it to be able to see the replay. The replays of incidents.
My head was like,
which is kind of
where's
clever,
the bandit
you don't get them in
from?
The ground.
it was bizarre. But anyway, my point being is, someone was having a conversation about, oh, if Romero had done that, in fact, he was identical to what Romero had done, and Romero gets like a red card. I think comparing it to what happened at the Chelsea game. This is really bad podcasting, by the way, because I've just completely forgot to watch this back. But I don't think Match of the Day had it. And that's the other frustration. I think that's the point I'm saying, that there have been countless incidents this season, some completely unrelated to Tottenham, where you think, hold on a minute, is that not the same tackle as that? So why is there an interpretation issue here? Why is it there some inconsistency with where you're looking at one
Danilo.
Thing?
It was Danilo that was their midfielder who'd done it. He came in like sort of with a sort of leading foot, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm not did he pull his studs away? No, he
made contact and then sort of had a straight leg still. And it is one that you think, genuinely, that if Romero does that, you're thinking, fuck, they're going to go and review this. So, like, I don't know. It's just, again,
I mean, obviously,
inconsistencies, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there could be an argument here that neither are red cards. And I guess that's the point. Like,
well, there is that too.
When is it a red? When is it a yellow? Why do we keep debating this shit like every single week off the back of these incidents? Like, all we want is to know that it's fair and it's consistent, and that seems to be the holy grail for the officials. And they're just, you know, they're just not working it out, and it just makes it a little bit frustrating. But it makes it interesting as well, because we can get to talk about this shit. What we're going to do, we're going to stop there. If you want to continue listening, go to patreon.com/spookyinpurgatory. We're going to talk about Newcastle away, off the back of West Ham and Fulham away. Are we nervous about Newcastle? We'll have a chat about that. And also, I want to talk about the Eric Dyer interview on The Overlap. If you've not watched that, go and watch it. I know some of you don't like Eric Dyer because all you can remember is the bad defensive lapses that he suffered towards the back end of his career at Tottenham. He's a lovely lad. I don't give a shit if some people think that's a wet wipe punditry, but he spoke really well at Tottenham, and I really like him. And we're going to talk about that on the Patreon part of the pod and a couple of other bits and pieces. So thanks for downloading. Dan, you can say goodbye to the freeloaders if you want.
Goodbye.
Yeah, that's all they deserve, mate. That's all they deserve. Up the Spurs. Catch you on the next one. See you later.
Yeah, cheers, mate.